You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, the Titusville and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Our AM dial is AM 1510. We have been planning this show for at least a month and a half. Ellen and I are very privileged today to have in our studio our good friend, Stanley Breeze, B-R-I-Z-Z, Breeze, like Breeze.
Yes.
And call me the Breeze.
Director of Community Services at Eckerd Kids. And in addition to that, he does so many other things. So we're going to be talking with Stanley a little bit about all the stuff he's doing here in our community. Welcome to our show, Stanley.
Hello.
And he's a fine-looking young man, too.
Oh, boy.
With his shirt all tucked in. We were just having a conversation, Ellen and I and Stanley, about today and how important it is for, you know, appearances really makes a difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
How you look and how you present yourself to the public. And we were saying that back home in Trinidad and Tobago, when I was a child, it was so important that you ironed your clothing. And Ellen was saying that when she got married, her husband's asking about ironing sheets. I don't think anybody irons sheets anymore.
Yeah, no. And it was just a question because in 30 years, I haven't ironed one sheet. Not one.
Well, Stanley,
lots of shirts.
They sell
no
steamers
sheet.
For that stuff.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, they've made it quite convenient, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, have you seen that video? I think it's a military, a general or something that talks about making a bed. How important it is to make your bed in the mornings.
Yeah.
And when once you make your bed, it sets the tone for the entire day.
It does.
I think for me, I do make my bed every single day. Even if I have to leave my husband sleeping in it, go to work, come home at 3:30, make that bed and get back in it at 4, I will make my bed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I just like the idea of the neatness of it all.
Yes.
But what it does, I think, it organizes your entire day. Even the days when I come home tired from work after working 8 hours, if I make my bed, then I automatically, my brain says, now go to the gym. It's kind of like it puts you in like a sequence mood.
Yeah. I make my bed every day too.
But it has to be instilled by somebody in your life, right?
Yes.
Usually mothers.
My mom was big on that. Not just the making the bed thing, but orderly. Like all the dishes had to be washed and dried before you went to bed. Everything had to be in order.
Otherwise, a jumpy coming in the night.
Oh, I would not go to sleep. Yeah, I'd be trying to get in the bed and before that was done and there's a knock at the door.
Yes.
Get up.
Yeah, and my mom went one extra step. She will put her hand on the bed and smooth it out with her hand and get all the creases out, you know? But talking about dishes, that is the truth. I'm not sure like where this generation we have is going. I had a few friends called me and they said, hey, I know you have your radio show on Mondays and once in a while you should do a show about what's happening with this generation and with our children because they noticed that the girls are excelling in so many areas, in leadership roles, in higher education, but a few of the boys are lagging behind. And I said, well, what is the issue? And it's just that, discipline. A lot of the boys are so hooked on going out with their friends, peer pressure, trying to keep up with the Jonases. And then with boys, it's not as simple as, you know, wearing makeups. It's not as easy as wearing makeup and getting your hair done, right? When a girl put on her makeup and gets her hair done and puts on a nice outfit, you'll feel so good about yourself. You're confident. But the boys, they're playing video games.
That's what we were talking about a little earlier. I think it might have something to do with arrested development because for the past 10 to 15 years, maybe, there have been all these action, what we call them, role-playing games online. They've gotten better and better, and they just captivate this generation of guys, which I think girls aren't so much into the video game things. So they've been living a virtual life for maybe 10, 15 years into their 20s and 30s.
Who would have thought that this generation would live a virtual life? Like, now they're talking about social media addiction, alcohol addiction, drug addiction, which we're going to talk a little bit later in the show. But I think it also is, there's an addiction, I think, of poor me. The poor me addiction. Like, let me blame everybody else for what went wrong in my life except myself.
Mm.
And sometimes I think we ought to say, well, you got to look in the mirror. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm. I think there's been so much more research on causality, why things are happening, that we've gotten a little bit, I want to say, deep into that end of the pool, as opposed to the, okay, this is what happened and this is why, which is a valid reason, but now how do you go forward? How do you keep living on past that causality?
Right.
Don't be a victim to it forever.
Right. Well, you know, we've talked about on the show that there are certain things in life that are so very important. And number one, food, friends,
yeah,
a little finances, family, and most importantly, the ability to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems as though a lot of our young people are not forgiving whatever they think is that stumbling block that's stopping them from going forward, and they're blaming everybody else. How do we get them out of that funk, Stanley? Because you're so well together. Everything
hope so.
About you is you learn, you give back, you educate. How do you get to that point?
You know what? I always still consider myself a work in progress, because I know I don't have everything together. But there's got to be some self-motivation instilled. It has to be. And maybe it comes from your parents or another mentor in life, because not everybody has the privilege or the blessing of having parents that are kind of together.
Yeah. Or even the environment in which they're raised.
Or being raised. And for some people, it might be if you have... some sort of religious faith, or maybe you were raised by parents that had a core set of values that stuck with you. And if those are instilled in you the proper way, and you have parents that listen to you, that's another thing we can talk about a little bit later.
Listening,
yes. That allow you, because as a parent, you know you've got more answers about life in general than your children. They might have the book smarts because they're reading that stuff new, but you've learned from life. So listening to them first and then dropping your knowledge.
Not like parents, the Caribbean parents who think we know it all.
Yeah.
You know, how many times have my kids said, well, you don't know it all. And I've had to calm down and sit down and listen. And, you know, literally my blood boils when they're talking,
mm-hmm,
because I get so, I'm like, gosh, they're right. And how do I say you're right?
You say you're right.
Yeah. And you have to. You just have to, right?
You have to say you're right.
So before we jump into why Stanley's here, because we're going to talk about Eckerd Kids and all the stuff
Eckerd Connects. Yes.
Right. And we said we weren't going to say
Eckerd. I'll
you know why?
Elaborate.
Because we've been so long with you guys, right?
Yeah.
We've heard it.
I appreciate the support.
I'm hoping today that we have a compromise for the government shutdown, because I was listening to that on the radio here, and they were talking about cybersecurity and homeland security and all the compromises. But believe you me, they said we're still well protected, because those who are showing up to work, they are protecting the United States. And even with the government shutdown, we're going to be A-okay. So I said, thank God for that.
Yeah.
Because people do love the United States, and they do understand how we have to secure our country, right? But I was like, well, I'm just hoping that just like we compromise in our marriages and compromise with our neighbors and compromise at our jobs, at some point, anyone who runs for office, you cannot run for office either to be straight on the left or on the right. There are people in the middle that have some answers too.
Right.
And they've got to be able to sit down. I'm kind of glad I'm not a person that's neither left nor right. I am in the middle. I'm an independent thinker. But that just happens to identify with a political party that I lean towards. But the thing is, when I think about it, I'm like, what? We're so grateful and blessed to be living in the United States and all that she or he has to offer, that I think at some point people have to compromise.
It just comes right down to the same thing that we've been saying on the show for 7 years. When emotions are high, intelligence is really low. If we can just get the hate out of it and all the name calling and
the
all of
egos,
those things,
I think,
and the egos, we
think
could certainly
egos.
Get to a quicker compromise. And maybe not everybody's going to be happy 100%, but I don't remember any decision, whether it was in a workplace or whether it was in my family. I don't remember any decision
my
that
children
went,
and I have to compromise.
Right, exactly.
For God's sake, yesterday I got home from work and I was tired, but very happy to see them because I worked my day off yesterday. I had some kebabs and rice in the fridge that I was planning to eat when I come home. Well, my son got a hold of it, and he heated it up, and he ate it, and he shared it with his brother. And then my daughter said, well, I'm hungry. So I said, you know what? I can make some shrimp scampi and rice in 30 minutes. So I compromised with my tiredness, and I said, you're not that tired where you can't cook this shrimp scampi and rice. And I did it. And then I made a salad, and they ate, and I was so happy. But that's what you do in life. You compromise with yourself and others around you so that at the end you have a
to
decision.
To make the best life.
Make the best out of the situation,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And you know what? I got a big fat thank you and a high five and everything else. And 2 pounds, 3 pounds of shrimp was gone. I'm like, whoa, this is some hungry people right here.
That's appreciation
but that's
for
what
mama.
But that's what mothers do, right? We really put everybody else before ourselves.
Yeah,
we do. And at some point, you know, they have to.
Historically.
Why do we do that? Why do you think?
Gender roles have been defined for a while, but I think the wrong definition of gender roles
yeah.
in certain aspects to where, and it's nothing wrong with being a provider and a nurturer. Like, we rely on that from our moms. It's helped a lot of us get to the good places where we are today. But I think some people dive so deep into that identity. Like, you have to identify with being that. That's what you become.
Yes.
And you forget that you're your own person, too.
Yeah. That's why I'm so glad.
Take care of yourself.
You know, that's why it's so nice that politically, too, like all over the world, roles have been defined and equality for people, and that men and women can assume different roles, too. It's okay. There's not you're not a sissy if you're a man and you cry.
It's healthy.
It's okay. Right? It's okay to have emotions. But anyway.
Why you have tear ducts.
Amen.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so here at Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we really have some lively conversations. Ellen and I meet every Monday right here at WWBC here in Cocoa, Florida. And our show is very fun and unscripted. We give out very valuable information. And we also have a lot of educational shows. Of lately, we've been doing a lot of human interest shows, and it looks like Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is heading more towards human interest stories and live, real stories. I get so many emails from people that want to come on the show, and then I have to tell them, well, Pastor Paul, don't let me just come and run my mouth for free. It does cost a little change, you know? And they're like, okay, well, I'll call you back. Then I don't hear from some of them again. But we wanted to start off our show today. Stanley is here, and he's been here before to speak about what Echoed Connects does. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about Echoed Connects and all the awesome things that you guys are doing?
I will, and I'll try to make it understandable and concise because we do so many things. So Echoed Connects, for those that may not be familiar with it, you may be familiar with the Echoed family name, Echoed Drug Stores.
Yes,
I worked
way
there
back
when I was 16.
Then.
Everyone still says they miss the pharmacy.
Right.
That family, amazing, great family, Jack and Ruth Echoed, they started Echoed as an organization to help youths that needed to escape from the inner city areas where they were getting in trouble, take them out to outdoor therapeutic wilderness camps, provide mentoring, and just give them an experience to improve their lives. And that was back in 1968. We've grown as an organization now, and now Echoed Connects, as it is named now, we really do that. We connect people to the services that they need. We also connect other providers in the community that maybe we don't provide the service, but maybe those two can get together and provide the service. We find opportunities to facilitate that. In Brevard County, we help those with a substance use history get housed that are experiencing challenges with housing. We help youths.
You do connect.
We do. We
you
connect
do a lot for
that.
The homeless too. We'll talk about all of that today. That
yeah.
is, you are making connections with people and for people.
Yes. Yes. We're doing the best that we can. I've got a great team of people that make that happen. School-based prevention programs to try to help youths to make the right choices in life and avoid substance abuse and other unhealthy activities. Supervised visitation. So those are our core programs here in the county.
Yeah. I know, last time you were on the show, we had talked a little bit about homelessness.
Yes.
And how many people are homeless in Brevard, and how many people are living one or two paychecks away from living in a car
mm-hmm.
or in the woods. So let's talk a little bit about that. Is it better now?
So it's always going to be a work in progress. What I would say is better now is that Brevard County has done a great job with the Brevard Homeless Coalition.
In identifying.
Yes. Of saying, here's an issue. Every year they're doing the homeless count, and you have people that work for these agencies that are not just behind a desk. They're out there trying to take a count, trying to find out how many people are in need. We've done a good job now about gathering the people together, the team, to help. We still have about 2,000 youths in schools that are identified as homeless. So that means that still needs to be worked on, or in transition, as we would call it. And these are people from families where the mom and dad, they work. But for whatever reason has occurred, they're living in campsites, or they're living in their cars. They've fallen on hard times, but they're still working, and they're still sending their kids to school. So this is not homeless in the sense of what we would say chronic homelessness. It's not the person on the side of the road.
Yeah, everyone thinks when they hear the word homeless, so many people often think it's a man with a cardboard standing on the road says, feed my family. But it's not. It could be your coworker. It could be your neighbor, the children of people you know.
And we've talked about the other social issues that could be causing that for the family, which is the increased health care costs and all of those other things. And
rent.
You never know. And rent the charts. I mean, I don't know how a family affords rent right now.
That's a big problem in Brevard right now is affordable housing. We need people. If you're in the real estate industry, if you own properties, if you're looking for something to do with them, please, please, please think about using it to help those that are having challenges with housing right now.
Yeah, I mean, affordable rent. The word affordable health care, affordable rent, affordable car insurance, affordable health insurance. Where did we lose the word affordable on what it really means, right? Because if you make 10 or 11 bucks an hour, by the time they take taxes out of your check, how are you supposed to pay rent, car payment, insurance, buy food, and take care of yourself? Even if you were responsible with your reproductive organs and you only have one child, even if you have one child, it's still a stretch. How are you still going to provide for one child even?
This is
true. Because oftentimes you have people say, well, we didn't tell you to have so many children. Mm-hmm. Well, even if you have one, it's difficult.
Oh, absolutely. Or no children. Especially in Florida, and I don't have the stats with me on Brevard County, but the wages have not kept up with the cost of living.
Not at all. Not at all. Even in areas where you would say, well, maybe I can afford here, it's still $650 a month for a two-bedroom.
And not in a very nice place.
Exactly. There are no landscaping. There's no swimming pool. There's no tennis.
To find something under. And I worked in close to the real estate industry, and I challenge anybody to find something under
hard.
$900. That isn't unsafe to raise children in, or not, you know, I mean, dirty, like that kind of unsafe.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about unsafe neighborhood. I'm talking about
where you don't see police sirens going off
every
day.
I'm not even
day,
talking about that
right?
part of it. I'm talking about like things that aren't working in the house that could hurt somebody.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Well, because, you know, human beings, we're quick to judge.
Yep.
We're quick to make assumptions, but we're not quick to jump in and say, let me help.
Oh, absolutely. It's easy to point the finger. And I have my real estate license. I haven't worked in real estate for a bit because I've been doing Eckerd for 12 years now.
Yes.
But prior to that, I went to school for counseling and crisis intervention, and kind of led me into what I do now. But I noticed that too, that the clients that are coming in, the places that we want them to be in, because many of them were trying to get out of substance use, that cycle, it's like $1,100 a month to find a place where you know they'll thrive in. And they can't necessarily afford that.
And then, you you have the other issue where nobody wants to hire someone who have a record.
Felony.
Or made a mistake or got terminated for
or
whatever reason.
Box.
You know, that's a flag right there too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Stanley, what are some of the reasons why people become homeless?
There's many. So,
most common ones.
Well, we work with individuals that have possibly, well, definitely in the past have had substance use issues. So because of addiction, a lot of them are not living responsible lives, correct? But even some that have fallen on hard times after a divorce, it's just something like that, a life change.
Emotionally, they give up.
Something has happened, they hit hard times, and because of that, they just fell into homelessness. It wasn't some choice they made.
Yeah, it's almost like once you stop caring, right? They stop caring about
defeated.
Their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And once you stop caring about your life, then you don't really care about anything else until someone meets you and say, hey, dude, or whatever, lady, your life is worth something, right? Because I've seen people like that where they get a divorce and they end up losing their home and then they lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And once you lose a job, there goes health insurance. Mm-hmm. How are you going to pay $800 a month for health care, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then once you lose your health care and you need your prescriptions, it's like a domino effect, one after the other.
I always tell this story of a mom that we were working with a while back that had a great job, had a divorce, got custody of the kids, and she had four kids, lost the job, and then couldn't find another job because they felt she was too overqualified. She was trying to find any job, just wanted to work. And so sometimes you just find yourself in that situation where everything seems to be going against you, and all you can do is say, well, I've got my car.
Yeah.
And I got my kids.
And that's
well,
paid
that's
for.
Why people yeah. protect their cars so much when hard times come. I do see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen cars like at the gym or certain places where there's a lot of clothes in the back seat, like all the way to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I know something is going on,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and one of the things that you've been working, so tell us before we jump into the opioid crisis and how we can help people with, mm-hmm. with problems and stuff, you just got an award.
Oh boy!
Yeah, tell us about your award. I was so proud of you, community service and Volunteer of the Year.
So
and
thank you to the team at Florida Today and the community for that. I am Citizen of the Year according to those wonderful people. I'm humbled by it because I once again I am not a perfect person. I'm just like anybody else. I just try to do my best. But I've got a great team of people, and I think that's what gets you to that point to get recognized for what everyone is doing, is you surround yourself with people that are awesome. So shout out to Talia Bryant and Lee McElroy, working for EchoConnex. They're running great programs with our prevention programs and with our housing program and supervised visitation program.
Yeah, how does EchoConnex differ from other charities in town?
Well, what I will say, and first of all, there's a lot of organizations in Brevard. There are a lot of not-for-profits. And
too many, I think, sometimes.
You think so?
Because everybody invites you to fundraisers.
This is true.
And you have to pick and choose which one you want to attend and what they're doing. And some of them, they kind of overlap, they do the same thing.
Yeah, and we're trying to work on that as a community of not-for-profits here in Brevard. We're trying to get together, and I want to thank Space Coast Health Foundation for that as well. They've created an environment where we're going to get together, I think quarterly, and talk about what everyone does. See where there's gaps and see where there's overlap and how we can
lots
streamline
of overlaps,
it,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
For sure. And with Eckerd, what I can't say what people don't do, but I can say one thing that we do is that we try to connect even when we're not benefiting from it.
Right.
So if I don't
that's a beauty of
have
it.
The service, I'm like, all right, let me make some calls. Let's find out. Maybe this agency does it. Let's pull them together at one of our events and get them in the room together and see if these agencies can create it, because it's not something that's in our wheelhouse.
Right. And you partner up with a lot of businesses as
yes,
well. Because
absolutely.
People believe in what you do, Stanley. That's why I believe in what you do.
Thank you.
A lot of us do. And you're so honest about it, about not just reaching out to people and showing them the way, but you actually hold them by the hand, which a lot of charities will give you a phone number and you're on your way. But you don't do that.
No, we do our best because people do need, they need some support along the way. They will stand on their own, and that is our goal, to get them to stand up. Like a lot of agencies use this phrase, a hand up, not a handout.
Yeah.
But they still need the hand.
Yes.
So we pull them along. And I'd like to thank also the realtors in this county have gotten together with us and supported us with so many clothes. I mean, some of the stuff, we go out to dinner, we can drop, what, $20, $30 on dinner like that. And thinking about that, like, wow, I could use that to maybe buy some items for families that need that hand up.
Yes.
Just a little something to get them by so they can get on their own two feet.
Where does EchoConnex get all their referrals? Where do you get your referrals from?
From the community and from other agencies. For being on a show like this.
Yeah.
And being
able to talk about it. Yeah.
So, you know, for our homeless program, other agencies that are trying to help the same population, maybe housing department, HUD. Perhaps housing for homeless, different agencies that are working with people from the schools.
And EchoConnex delivers results. So when people see the results, they're able to refer again. Do you ever have to turn people away?
We do. I never want to turn anyone away. I always want to turn them to something else. So we never turn people away. It's more of a, okay, I can't help you right now with my resources. But you will
give them something.
Yeah, let's get on the track to find something. For instance, some of our services you do have to qualify for. Our housing program is specifically for people that have had some sort of substance use issue in the past, even if it was a one-time occurrence, because we don't want that stress putting people back to relying on substances.
Yeah.
Some people may not qualify based on that, or some people may not have sufficient income to stay where we help them get into.
Right.
Because we help them the first few months on a declining level of support to get into their housing. But I don't want to put you on a $2,000 a month home.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that you won't be able to afford. So,
are you seeing, so let's transition away a little bit because, you, of course, we're having the event. Ellen, are we going to talk about the event now or at the end of the show? We could do it now and at the end.
I think we should do it twice.
Twice. Okay, so why don't we?
I think it's a great.
So our,
Hall of Fame is a great.
Well, okay. I don't think we're going to break today because he has a whole hour, unless you want to. Do you need a break? I think we're okay.
We can do what we can.
We can do it because the thing is, the podcast is going to go, the entire show is Stanley's.
So. All right.
So, you can.
Whatever you guys do, I don't want to mess up your flow.
No, we're good. No, we're good. We're good. Well, because this is such an important topic because, you know, so many people are claiming that they're doing so much for other people in Brevard or in the nation. And then oftentimes you'll find that it's not the case. But with Eckerd Connects, we do see results. Mm-hmm. So we want to tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and friends here on WWBC AM 1510 and 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. A little bit about the charity. This is like your biggest event.
It's our annual big event.
Right. So tell our listeners a little bit about that event and how they could contact you. Maybe they might want to donate. Are you taking a donation for prizes?
We will, for silent auction.
And items. If you can't attend, you could still send some money in.
Yes. Thank you for saying that.
Yes.
Because some people have said they can't attend, and I still would like them to donate if they can.
Yeah, even if it's $50, maybe
anything.
$10, whatever. Every little bit counts.
Anything. So Brevard Walk of Fame has become our annual event. This is our 9th year doing this particular format. And our goal with the Brevard Walk of Fame, of course, is to raise awareness about our programs, the ones we just talked about. But also, I'd like to have selected people in the community that have a big platform. So these are some people that are well-known in the business community, well-known in this Brevard in general, but ones that are doing good for the community, that are giving back in some meaningful way, and they mean what they do. I'd like to recognize them at the event, and this year we're recognizing Ed and Cheryl Scott. People might know them from...
Do you know them, Ellen?
From, Ed and Cheryl Scott, the Scott Center for Autism.
Yes.
And Ed Scott has done they've done so much. To read their resume of things they've done is takes a while because they've done so many good things. We're recognizing them, and my goal with that is to inspire others in the community who may have some resources to use it like these individuals.
And in simple English, that means if you have some change.
It could be your time, too.
Because,
it could
be you know, a lot of people have money, and they can use those resources to help others, and they don't. And you're right, when people come forward like these
Ed and Sharon Scott,
why not? They're really setting an example, blazing the trail for so many.
Absolutely. And on top of that, he's done so much. So the Center Global for Development, he's co-founded that. He's worked with Bono and Bill Gates and George Soros to set up charitable movements. He's gone to Africa himself, and I've got the photos to prove it.
Yeah.
Like to get there and really see how he can hands-on makes changes. And right. So it's not
to make a difference in people's lives.
Yes.
I mean, you know, and I know, I mean, growing up in the islands, you know, I remember just the act of somebody giving us a water barrel and a proper spout.
Yes.
How different, what a difference that make in your life.
It's the honest truth. Just something that we take for granted that's simple. So, I mean, that's one thing that I really want to highlight at the event this year. And so in addition to that, we also have our Children's Hero of the Year segment. So these are individuals that maybe they're not a large business person or they're not known everywhere, but they have done all they can in the community in some way.
Yes.
And so we'd like to recognize those individuals as well at the event. So if you go to brevardwalkoffame.com, it will take you to more information about the event and how to sponsor if you're able
and
to
sponsor.
And
it is it's a very dressy event.
Black tie.
Yes, it is. And also where the event is held this year, there really is a lot of parking.
Mm-hmm.
There's no issue with parking. And what I like about this venue is you're not limited to one menu. You could bring in your food, right?
Yes.
Not bringing it from yourself, but you
right,
know, from outside
from your
vendors.
Own kitchen.
Yeah, unless I probably will cook a little curry and bring it in.
It's at the Oasis at Palm Shores, which is the
vendors.
Space. Yeah, that's so funny. It's the Space Coast Association of Realtors new facility, right there by Wickham and Pineda Plaza Way.
Yeah.
On February 23rd.
It's a little
23rd.
Tricky to get there.
Yes, do not go on Piney the Causeway because you might cross over to Cocoa Beach and Merritt Island.
Right. Listen to the GPS.
Yes, right there on Wickham Road by Pineda, February 23rd, 2019. It's a Saturday at 6 p.m.
It's very relaxing venue. They've got those little chairs out front.
Mm-hmm. I like those chairs.
Yes.
It's like a porch.
I know.
Like a country porch
almost.
Yeah,
every time I go there, I'm like, okay, I want to get one of these. But then I'm always afraid if I get one of those and you screw it onto your patio, are you going to pull the whole house down?
You know, make sure someone knows what they're doing before
yeah,
they try to install it.
Because grandchildren could come there and try to monkey around with that thing, too.
So who are the speakers? You've always had, like, great speakers or attendees.
I want to say, like, last year, we had George Mkhitaryan of mm-hmm. Parrish's presidency, gave an outstanding speech about just the opioid crisis, which I know we're getting into later, but throwing some of that responsibility back on pharmaceutical companies and medical professionals. So it was great. This year, Ed Scott himself is going to be speaking,
wow.
As he's recognized,
yeah.
about some of the great things he has done. And we're going to do our utmost to kind of really share from that perspective. But one of the best speakers we have is our clients. They're our clients.
Yes.
And we're going to have a client, a family that has benefited from our services. And they're going to talk about how they have overcome their challenges
yeah.
and really speak to the audience.
Real
about
life
that.
Testimonials.
To me,
I like those.
Those are the most effective.
You know, we may have somebody for you next year and I have to connect you. A CETA connects.
CETA connects.
We have a physician who is a pediatrician that's going to be calling in on our show frequently. Her name is Dr. Ochena Ome. Okay. She was born in Nigeria. She's a pediatrician and she just had her book published. She's a public speaker and she talks about depression and anxiety and suicide in teens and what she is doing to help prevent that.
We need to talk.
Yes.
Yes.
I think she's listening. Sometimes she tunes in, but she's going to be calling in the end of the month. And I actually told her that I would try to connect her with you as well. I think, and she wants to come to Florida. She wants to come to Florida and she wants to visit. So maybe you can have her lined up, I think, for 20 minutes or 25 minutes.
Please,
it would be awesome.
We'd love to talk because that's one of our school. So with our school-based programs, we do a lot of that, helping not just teens, but even elementary, middle school, and high school age youth to try to make the right decisions to not resort to
alcohol and drug use. She's seen a spike as a pediatrician.
Or
she's
suicide.
She's been seeing a spike with children with anxiety disorders, depression, leaning towards suicides. And every time she sees one and she hears one nationally, she will put it on Facebook and write a commentary about it. She's a beautiful person inside out, and I've learned so much by just reading what she writes and how to help people. Yes. And how to use forgiveness too as a tool.
Yes.
And reaching out to people. She's awesome. So I'll have to connect
You'll
you with
have
her.
To. Have you had Liz Mkhitaryan or Lori Duster from the Youth Mental Health Task Force here to talk? That's they're promoting Sources of Strength right now, which is really talking about that. It's addressing the suicide issue and removing the stigma. That really goes along with what we're going to talk about with the opioid crisis, that we need to open up this conversation to get people
talking
and the support.
Well, open the conversation and don't be ashamed. And,
yes.
and the stigma attached to so many diseases like depression and opioid addiction and
mm-hmm.
and hopelessness and all. I mean, it's time to start the conversation, right? But what was nice, I was driving here and then at a traffic light, I'm serious, I saw my friend Dave Ehrenberg. He wrote something on Facebook and I thought it was so neat. He says, for the first time on record, the odds of accidentally dying from an opioid overdose in the United States mm-hmm. are now greater than those dying in an automobile accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, of course, I responded and I said, oh, gosh, I wish he could just call in on the show one day. He's a state attorney in Palm Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's been working on this crisis forever, doing stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, this is one of the areas where Stanley has strengthened in dealing with helping people to overcome opioid crisis, giving them the education and the tools and connecting them with the right people and resources to help. So tell our listeners, what exactly are opioids?
So in layman's term, if you've ever had or heard of or been prescribed oxycodone, hydrocodone, Vicodin, painkillers, mm-hmm. Those are all opiates. And most people, I don't want to overstate and say most, but a lot of individuals that have found themselves in that cycle of addiction, it's been because of a legitimate reason. They've been prescribed pain medication for an operation, an accident, and not realizing the power of opioids have found themselves addicted. Not being able to afford that medication going forward, that resorts now into heroin use.
Which is cheaper.
Which is cheaper, easier to get. You don't have to hassle with a doctor and try to convince him to give you more pills.
But it grows the question as to why, and you know, we can't solve all the problems, right? But I think about that. So why are doctors even, they know what a drive that oxycodone has on the brain and how addictive it really is. I mean, there's got to be alternatives.
They do know, and they have a lot of measures now in place.
Yes.
When ordering opioids. They really do, and they've come a long way with education and, you know, the drug dosing and trying different, you know, whatever interventions to help. They are doing it. I've seen it.
And that's good.
And I wanted to make sure I have my facts right, too. So in Florida, there's a 3-day and a 7-day limit on the prescription of opioids for acute pain. So it requires that healthcare providers check the PDMP, which PDMP stands for Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, to see if that individual has already been prescribed by a different doctor opioids so that they can't opioid or doctor shop.
Right.
But what's happening, and that's a good thing, and it's a good thing they've limited it, but what's happening is that people that can't get it that way.
They go around it.
They go
to their friends.
Grandma's medicine cabinet, right. Whoever they can find it, or maybe heroin drug dealer. So now you've got, I mean, soccer moms on heroin.
Yeah.
You know, right. I mean, to be kind of hyperbolic.
I mean, and you know, I think the larger issue is like, what responsibility does the pharmaceutical companies bear for this?
That's a great question. We've got a few of them that are on board with trying to make changes, of course, now.
Yeah, yes.
That it's an issue. And that speaks more back to causality, because a lot of these things were put on the market without people really realizing what they were getting into. Not realizing the power of it. I had it described to me, and I went to a conference on this, like, why is this stuff so powerful? What is the effect? How can I really get someone who's never used an opioid to understand it? And one of the medical professionals there that was doing the presentation said, okay, you start off with something that really gets your endorphins flowing or your pleasure center. Let's say chocolate cake, you love it, right? And then you move up to maybe when you're by a warm fire on a cold night, that fuzzy feeling. And then you move up to, I hope I can say this, the best sex you've had in your life.
Whatever. So it's a feel good.
These feel goods. He said, you take that and you multiply that. And I forget the number he used, by maybe like 25 or, you know, 40 times. That's the feeling somebody gets when they take that first time one of these pills.
Right. And
how do you counteract that?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, they said the deaths across the United States have steadily grown over time. They have been almost 115 a day. That was what I read in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're in 2019. Imagine that.
Oh, yeah.
Probably more than that.
It is really, really disconcerting that it's gotten to this point, and it knows no face. So you're not just looking at someone that you say, oh, that's a drug, you know,
disparaging terms
like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an addict, or that's, it could be anybody. It could be your teacher at school.
Neighbor,
friends, doesn't matter. It could be anyone. So we're really trying to get people to open up the conversation, not be ashamed to talk about it. If you need to talk to someone, if you need help, talk to someone about it.
Right. Because I said 80% of the people suffering from an addiction started with prescription for opioid pain relievers.
Yes.
80%.
I was going to bring that statistic up. I love that you've done your homework.
Yeah, I do.
Yes, go for it.
I do my homework.
I love it.
Because you know what? I think, I feel like Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, I started a show because I was writing a column for the paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a nice following. And then I figured, if you're going to put an hour into the show, do your homework. So that you're speaking the truth when you come on the show, and speaking from the heart.
80% it's a huge statistic, but it's the truth. It started, so that's what I wanted to emphasize. It starts off a legitimate way for many people. This is something they were prescribed. The days have been, you know, past now, but back in the day, if your doctor gave you something, your doctor gave it to you. You take it.
Yeah.
You trust them.
You trust that they know what they're giving you. And they know to tell you how many times you should take it and how long she should stay on it. We've had law enforcement officers tell us that, yeah, I had pain and I got prescribed and I finally realized how strong this stuff is and what it takes to kind of wean yourself off of that.
They said in 2016, the number of opioid prescriptions had increased to 236 million after a peak of 282 million in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, here's the thing. I know that a lot of people, when they go, when they visit a physician, whether it's an urgent care or emergency room, if the doctor tells them you will be okay with exercise, relaxation by walking in a park, meditation, talk to someone, and take 2 Tylenol, they think that doctor is horrible. They want the prescription.
Yeah.
It's almost true. Like the when you have a virus, if you don't give them the antibiotic, they say, well, I didn't get nothing. How about a little lemon juice and honey?
You make a great point, because we are in that instant gratification society, yes. And it gets worse every generation. You get everything instantly on your phone. If your phone lags one time, it could work 1,000 times, but the one moment the internet drops or something doesn't work, you want to throw it out the window.
There's commercials on it, right? Another dropped call.
It's true. Our life has gotten that way. So when you go to the doctor, you like, give me that thing that will fix it now.
Right. Right. But here's the thing. They said that what can we do collectively, right? The opioid epidemic isn't one person's problem, so it will take everyone to beat it. Mm-hmm. And so some of the things they're saying we should do is knowing the dangers, the signs, the symptoms of opioid abuse can save someone's life.
Yes.
So what are some of the signs and symptoms when you speak to people that you hear about?
So, I mean, there are several. I mean, are they frequently dozing off at work? That's a really, you know, and of course I could just be tired. Don't accuse someone
right, right.
of
yeah, yeah.
opioid. Lack
but consistently
of productivity.
Or chronically.
Consistently, chronically, and moments that don't make sense. How's their
disorientation?
Disorientation. Do they live with you? Is money mysteriously disappearing? I mean, some of those signs you kind of know, right? Ability to focus, social changes that are red flags.
Not hanging out with friends anymore.
Exactly. Or the type of friends that you see them with. I mean, yes. there's a lot of the ones that you can actually see. Some are really good at hiding, though, and you wouldn't know. What we're doing in this county, we just started, and this is kind of a volunteer thing, and Eckerd's part of it, but this is not something that really I can say is Eckerd started. I went to Orange County at one of their seminars on this and decided we needed something like this in Brevard, and so we've started an opioid task force made up of many members of the community, law enforcement, Brevard County Sheriff.
Get some Trinidadian grandmothers on there.
Bring them in. Bring them in. The school board's on board, Parish, Health First, Steward. We've got the health department. And we're talking about how we can immobilize all sectors of society to do this. Another thing to think about, too, is learning what Narcan is.
Yes.
And acquiring it.
Yes.
Ellen told me a little story right before we got on air about the usefulness of having that and what that does. And you can get it now. You don't need a prescription for it. You don't need any special things for it. Go to Walgreens. Go to
yes.
Different places. And what that does is if someone...
Oh, call our friend Louis.
Louis Garcia.
Awesome. He'll find you and give it to you. Put it in your hand.
Yes.
Attend one of his classes.
I was trying to get with him, and it was during a crazy busy time, and we weren't able to get together to do that. But he's been helping people in a grand way to try to get that out in the community. And so if someone's in the middle of having a moment where you believe they're overdosing, that Narcan can be used to knock the opioid off the receptors and bring that person back.
They can revive that person back. And, you know, and so many people go on to live such quality lives after that.
Yes.
Save their life, you know. But here's the thing, you know, when we talk about addiction, no matter what kind of addiction is, there's always a stigma attached.
Yes.
I think one of the main reasons why people don't bring up the conversation is because they don't want someone to point fingers to them and say, I knew that you were so-and-so-and-so, right?
Yes.
So how do you say to someone, even if you suspect something, that you really should open up that conversation?
And so it depends on the individual, because you can't paint everyone who is struggling with this with the same brush. But I think the goal is to just say something and let them know you're available and that you're not going to judge. We come from backgrounds where, especially in my community, so I would even say the African-American community as well, but even in other, I think everybody has that. So I won't put it in just in that one basket, where if something was wrong with somebody, oh, they're crazy.
Yep.
Or, oh, they're a drug addict.
Or psycho.
Like, they were labeled. Like, they made this choice to wake up one day
It's so sad that society does that to each other.
Yes.
You know, I would say what worked the best for us growing up as children in Trinidad and Tobago with our grandmothers was our grandmothers used a lot of scare tactics with us.
Yes.
And they also told us something was bad.
Mm-hmm.
They told us, if you start smoking cigarettes, you will continue to smoke cigarettes. If you drink alcohol, you will drink alcohol, you will drive, this will be the consequence. They gave us stories and examples of people who were on who drank excessively or smoked weed, or they would talk to us about people who, you know, just had an addiction of something.
I saw it in my family.
Yeah, and so we kind of like they used examples, real life examples, because they didn't have social media and telephones and TVs. So they told you about the fella up the road who was drinking and driving and knocked somebody down.
Yeah.
Or they'll tell you about somebody who was high and he fell down because he thought he was swimming and he jumped yeah. in a place yeah. and hit his head on concrete. And the stories got repeated. So how come this generation, the stories with all the communication we have, the stories aren't getting, they're not scaring them enough.
It's not because it's, and there's many reasons, but I think now that, you see it in politics as well, things swing so far right and they swing so far left. So now there's reasons for everything and people are putting excuses in front of
right,
reasons why.
Right, like, right.
We don't want to label. We don't. We want to be careful about labeling. But now it's gotten to the degree where, okay, we got to label some of this stuff so that people know they can be helped. Everything's not okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, the end result is you want to help people,
you
right?
Wanna
and you
want to
emphasize that, truthfully, prevention, meaning avoid altogether, is what we want. But that's not possible in today's society. People cannot cope. And a lot of them turn to psychiatrists, psychologists, their own GP for help.
Mm-hmm.
They get that prescription that, like you say, make them feel so good mm-hmm. that it's a want. Now, either you want it or you need it, right?
I would say that coping mechanisms is a great thing to instill as early as possible in your youth and your children. We're working on right now we have a social media campaign we're doing with Brevard Prevention Coalition and Opioid Task Force called I Choose Me. www.ichooseme.net and also on Facebook and Instagram, I Choose Me FL. Please follow those. We're building it up. And what we're trying to do is show people positive choices to make in life. So I Choose Me, meaning I choose my family, my business, my future. I choose positive choices. I think if we start instilling those coping mechanisms, those positive choices now, because this generation right now, they're in the thick of it. I don't know.
I pray yeah. for them.
They're in the thick of it. But
I pray for this generation, I swear, because, you know, they say addiction rates are higher in poor people, not because they are less moral or have greater access to drugs, but because they're more likely to experience childhood trauma, chronic stress, high school dropout, mental illness, unemployment. And we talked about that, the environment in which they're raised.
Yes.
And so, I mean, so what do we do? How do we expand our drug treatment industry to support more groups and more people?
Well, it's education
mm-hmm.
that has to be a component with it. And also making sure that people understand what their options are, putting it more into schools, starting earlier with that. It's so important to start the conversation earlier. It's never too young. Another thing I want to talk about with that is making sure that people understand that whatever way they go, counseling is always always has to be included in that. If you decide to use some sort of medicated assisted treatment, there's nothing wrong with that, but make sure it is included with some sort of professional counseling to help you get on your feet.
So what is the call for action that we want our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today to learn? What is it we want them to do? The takeaway today is open the conversation
yes.
with your family members at home. Don't label people. Don't judge mm-hmm. them. And maybe they could call Echoed Connects. Give them the phone number
absolutely.
And the website.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because once again, we will connect you however way we can, especially through the coalition. So www.echoed.org is our organizational website. But for our local phone number, it's 321-253-0030. In Brevard County.
Right, and the opioid crisis started when in the 90s is what I was reading. And why is it yes. so bad like now in 2019? But all the communication we have, it didn't get better, it got worse.
We've seen what we call, and I think the individuals I work with that are working against suicide as well have used a great illustration. You imagine a river that ends like in a waterfall. It just cascades, and it's after a while it just starts flowing. Right?
Like the Niagara Falls.
Like Niagara Falls. Or even if you envision something at your house, like a sink, you fill it up to a certain point, and
ooh,
after that, it just
don't even go there.
Over. Well, do you have plumbing issues? Oh, yeah. So if you think of that, that one's more visceral for you. So I use that.
Yeah.
Right. A sink that we're seeing the overflow now. And what we're trying to do now is do what we call upstream prevention, where you stop it before it overflows and cascades down. We're trying to get that for the next generation coming up. So I think that's what it's been. It's been an increase.
Well, there's no easy fix.
Well, they used to put cocaine in Coca-Cola, mm-hmm. right? So maybe that's like one of those evolutions. Maybe that, because they didn't know back then, and maybe somehow they'll fix this opioid thing. much like the same way that they fixed all the things
it's
that
all
had
about
cocaine
education,
in them
right? Everything
time.
Goes to education.
Well, we just know so much more right. now, and it's just a shame that we go through and that people are suffering because of it.
Right. It's, well, they say, what's being done about the opioid epidemic now? And one of the biggest questions about the opioid crisis is what's being done in Brevard County as well as in our nation, right? And it's better managing prescriptions of painkillers, mm-hmm. which I've seen. That is true. My husband had to take a two-hour course to renew his medical license all the time now, and so does other physicians, right? Mm-hmm. Finding alternative ways to treat your chronic pain.
Yes.
We talked about relaxation. What are some of the things people can do?
They can.
We know, walk and run and jump in the gym. My God, the gym membership is cheaper than buying prescription drugs, mm-hmm. but not everybody are educated enough and can cope with that.
Exactly. And you don't always need medication. Sometimes you do. Once again, I don't want to say all mm-hmm. medication is bad, but you don't always need medication. There are natural remedies that people have found that they've used. Some people with certain things can tough it out.
That's our culture. That's
they
our
can
culture.
Coping is almost not a skill anymore. It has to be retaught. I went to an oral surgeon once, and they gave me a prescription for Vicodin. I didn't take it, and this is before I even knew as much as I know now about opioids. But I waited 2 days. I was fine. 2 or 3 days, the pain subsided.
Yep.
Well, you know,
I had major surgery, and they gave, and I told them I was taking Tylenol.
Yeah, Tylenol.
I just don't. Yeah, and maybe some days I took 3 Tylenol,
mm-hmm.
but it still worked.
Over-the-counter right. medication still works yeah. for right. pain management.
Yeah, and exactly. one of the greatest things we can do is launch a public awareness campaign and educational programs to reduce the number of people who start using opioids. And that's what Eckerd Connects does. That's it in a nutshell, what you all are doing.
We have, and back to I Choose Me, with the whole Brevard County Opioid Task Force, we are doing that in multiple counties right now. We partner with Orange, Osceola, and Seminole to do that as well. An educational campaign about how to address the issue, how to get education to our children, but also to the older, our grandparents. They're being prescribed as well. You know, how to get to the doctors, the pharmacists, how to say no when you're being prescribed something. You have the right to
right.
say that you don't want that.
And also getting people with addiction into treatment centers. Now, we know that Brevard does not have enough treatment centers. What can we do to get more treatment centers in Brevard? And not just Brevard, but around the nation, there aren't enough people. You know, you're released from the emergency room. You get a prescription. Mm-hmm. You go home. Some people don't even have a home to go back to. So how do we overcome this? This is an issue that I think needs more thought, more money, and more time.
It's truly money. We need to go to those who have the means to help invest in that in the community. And instead of building whatever else is being built, maybe looking into it. Because really, at the end of the day, you pay for it as
yes.
a taxpayer. Mm-hmm. You pay for the damage that some of these individuals who have unfortunately been victims to substance use disorder are going to rot on the county, correct? So you want to make
True.
Sure that you can...
In the long term.
So let's invest some of that up front into getting some more treatment centers. We need more licensed mental health practitioners. We need more people that are clinical that can assist in that area, for sure. They're overrun. We don't have enough here.
Yeah, I can't stress enough, if we have anyone who's listening who have someone in their family or their friend circle who... at the risk of an opioid overdose, how important it is to get the Narcan in their cabinet at home, whether the nasal spray or if they're educated enough to do the injectable or whichever. Because after speaking with Luis Garcia and hearing his story of how many people they have been able to revive and help. And as a nurse myself, I know that for a fact.
But not to
I don't
mention
think
the
people have enough education about that.
But not to mention the fact, the ripple effect of the opioid crisis and how it's affecting Eckerd Connects,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And how it's affecting the children and how it's affecting the families of the people that are directly affected, obviously, the person who's become addicted. So, I mean, this ripple effect is just causing havoc along the whole the whole stream, if you will.
Well, like he said, it has a ripple effect.
Yeah.
And here we are worrying about building a wall, but we have other ways we could use that money, right? So how do we caution people, too, about the dangers of drug mixing? Because you have people that put on a fentanyl patch and then they're taking something else. I mean, is their pain that bad? I think a lot of the pain is physical, mental, social, emotional, mental. It's you mix all of that into one head. My God, how do you help people?
Yeah, and everyone's different, has different situations with their pain management. But I would caution everybody, do not mix your meds at all. Some people go and they'll take the pill the doctor gave them and they still have their glass of wine at night. Not a good idea.
No, exactly.
At all. Especially if you're someone who needs help right now, who is in that cycle, don't trust your drug dealer.
Yeah.
Don't trust what someone's handing you from the cap. You don't know what's in this stuff. Fentanyl is so dangerous. It's basically an elephant tranquilizer. People are skipping the addiction phase at this point because some people are dying on first use.
Yeah.
Because the stuff is so powerful.
It is. I know when we remove a fentanyl patch at work, we have to have two nurses sign for it to make sure we're disposing of it properly,
yes.
Right? But here's the thing. I do feel like the war on drugs, that it's failed. We failed. And I think that the frontline people are the doctors, the ones writing the prescription. And in conjunction with that, the pharmaceutical companies. Mm-hmm. How do we get those two to say, wait a minute, like you said, you had your tooth pulled or oral yeah. surgery. Yeah. My husband had back surgery and he refused to take a pill. He said, I will walk. I will go to therapy. I will talk to my friends. I will play cards, but I am not, because he said, once I start from education, I know that the feeling that I get is a quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we educate more doctors, more people that, you know, when you see a patient and whether you're cutting off a limb or you're working on a back or you're doing oral surgery, to please educate yourself so that you could educate your patient.
It starts in the community. We've done that with our healthcare subcommittee of the Opioid Task Force and with the health department to go out to these doctors and really educate them on what you just said, but also on the prescription drug monitoring programs to make sure they know how to use that and they know how to check that to make sure that their patients are not double dipping.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, to make sure that you're not pointing fingers at people as well. No, you know, people should not feel that they're so good, they're so better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. They're not. We're all human beings on this planet trying to make it while we still have health, strength, and breath.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think because of the color of your skin or your religion or your money in the bank or your class that you're better, you're not. Because disease, addiction, and Mr. Death is one step away.
From everyone.
From everyone. So I like to tell people, you know, I like to be positive. I think positive. But at the same time, positivity is infectious. You could spread that to other people as well, right? So let's hear about the event one more time before we go off air.
Yes, to support everything that we were just speaking about and connecting people to what they need, please support the Brevard Walk of Fame, www.brevardwalkoffame.com or www.eckert.org. If you cannot attend or sponsor, send in what you can. We'll appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, and just the word Eckert connects. They're connecting you to someone who can help you, whether it's homelessness, whether you just lost a job, whether you have a prescription problem, opioid addiction, whatever it is. Some people don't even have gas for their car, and you guys help them with that,
yes,
too. So we're saying that out of all the charities that come on our show, Eckert Connects is always the one that live by example. So thank you, Stanley Breeze, for coming on our show, and we're so happy about your award. And Ellen, thanks again for setting Stanley up and helping
and
me get
really
on the show.
And just really quickly, we do want to thank our sponsors, even though we didn't get a chance to hear from them today. We want to thank Jot Coffin Associates, Dixie Crossroads, Cloud9 Sleep Shop, and MedFast. So thank you all so much for supporting Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And next week, we'll have another fantastic show. Thank you, Stanley. And everything is posted on our Facebook page.
Yeah, we have to find out about last week for our listeners, for the ones who did text me and email me. We had some technical issues last week with our show. We're going to try to figure out how to get that on our website.
You're listening to WWBC, Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rock.